thanks so much for having me here today. I'm glad that you guys were able to stick around for this presentation. And I'm here today to talk about the work that my research team did on assessing the work of Southern states in HIV linkage retention and re-engagement programs. And I'm here on behalf of my team, which includes researchers from both Duke University and University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. So I'm sure many of you here are very familiar with HIV/AIDS statistics, but just to give you a brief overview, so Duke University is in North Carolina, which is located in the South, and the South is disproportionately affected by high incidence of prevalence of HIV/AIDS. And not only is that epidemic concentrated in the South, but racial and ethnic minority groups in the South are also bearing a great burden of that disease. In 2013, African Americans represented 57% of new HIV infections in the South, but they only represented 19% of the total population. And obviously, there are a variety of socioeconomic factors that all play into this. Ethnic and minority groups have higher rates of uninsurance, higher poverty rates, less access to medical care, and obviously, there's a lot of racial stigma and economic injustice that all continues to play into the health disparities that we see represented in this epidemic. And so you can see here just a map to briefly point out what I was talking about. So you kind of have on the East Coast, over here in New York, you have an epicenter. And then over here on the West Coast in LA, you have an epicenter. But other than that, the HIV/AIDS epidemic is really concentrated in the Southeast, which a lot of people don't realize. And this the U.S. South here is defined by the U.S. Census and CDC region of the South. And so this project came out of the North Carolina Systems Linkage and Access to Care, or NC-Link. It's a four-year demonstration project funded through the HRSA-SPINS program, and Duke University is partnering with the North Carolina Division of Public Health and University of North Carolina in order to evaluate the implementation of the project that's being funded through HRSA. And the purpose of this is to increase the number of people living with HIV/AIDS engaged in consistent care by creating a system of linkages along the HIV continuum of care in North Carolina. And NC-Link is doing a lot of different initiatives in North Carolina to get people linked into care, but one of the things that they're doing is they're creating the role of a state bridge counselor. And basically what this person's job is to ensure quick linkage to care along for both newly diagnosed persons living with HIV/AIDS, but also with people who have fallen out of care. And this really came out of a push to, obviously we have DIS in North Carolina, but we really wanted to move away from people feeling like they were being punished for not being in care, and so that kind of led to the creation of the state bridge counselor position. And so as you can see here, this is the HRSA HIV continuum of care, and what the state bridge counselors in North Carolina are doing, they're really focusing on these linkage to care efforts and these retention and re-engagement efforts. And this continuum of care was created in order to be able to really assess and identify the barriers that were leading people to not get linked into care at various stages. And so this is where they're kind of focusing on. And the goal is to get everyone fully engaged in HIV care, because if they're fully engaged in HIV care, then they're going to have better health outcomes, and they're going to have better maintenance of their medical outcomes, as opposed to if they're in this continuum of care and not really getting consistent care, they're more likely to die of AIDS, they're more likely to have poor health outcomes, and they're more likely to have higher medical expenses. So it's really important that we try to get everyone to this final box over here. And so basically, what we wanted to ask is, we're like, okay, well, we're doing this state bridge counselor position, but we wonder, is anyone else in the South doing this? And that's basically what we wanted to find out and see if they did have a position similar to ours, whether or not it was, and find out the similarities and differences between the positions and the ways that it was functioning. So just briefly, our methods. You can see here on the right, the U.S. Census defined Southern region states. We were also confused as to why Delaware and Maryland were included, but they're in there. So they got called as well. And basically we just identified a state representative from the health department in each of those states and reached out to them. The phone interviews were conducted in winter of 2013 to spring of 2014, and we used a semi-structured interview guide. And then we just took all of those results and put them into Qualtrics and analyzed them to try to figure out the similarities and differences between the different state programs. So of the 17 southern region states, including D.C., 15 representatives, so 88%, from the state health departments agreed to participate in our interviews. One state representative declined participation, and one we could not get a response from. And so as you'll see here, the majority of the states did have some sort of state-run HIV linkage retention re-engagement program. Two did not have a state-run program, but they did have a regional program that the state was kind of aware of and managing somewhat. And so we asked them questions about that regional program. And so here we have kind of a breakdown of what the different who the different programs are targeting. Due to the funding structures, a lot of programs targeted special populations, which included men who have sex with men, women, people of color, incarcerated populations, pregnant women. And then sometimes states would have other programs as well that would target all people living with HIV/AIDS. And so depending on the state, they might have one or the other or both. And so it was quite a variety of programs that they had. And also the employment structure for this HIV care navigator differed greatly. Among half of the states, the state health department is the direct employer of the physician, but a lot of states also utilized a combination of employment methods. So either the CBOs that were primary care providers for Ryan White or the counties were the employers of the HIV care navigators. It really just depended. Also, again, the job training varied a lot. Some states provided initial and follow-up. Some just provided initial. Some provided no training at all and just kind of adopted their DIS into the program. So it really depended, and it also depended whether or not training was mandatory. Sometimes it was just kind of like, follow-up if needed, which we were like, well, maybe that should be a little stronger, but it's okay. So that really varied a lot. And also the content varied a lot. Lots of states were using motivational interviewing and artists, and some were using both. But we also had one or two states using Act for Life, some general field training. But it also varied whether or not they were required to use what they were being trained on. So some states would train their, give them kind of like a tool kit to use, but not really require that they actually use motivational interviewing or artists in their interaction with trying to get people engaged in care. The scope of support services provided to clients also varied greatly. Transportation was the big thing that people really, really tried to provide, either by getting them to appointments themselves or giving them bus fares or gas vouchers. And then you can see some of the other things that were covered by the support services here. Most of the HIV care navigators worked with their clients for up to 90 days, but sometimes they would work with them for up to 6 months. Sometimes they would work with them till they were engaged in care. Sometimes they would work with them just continuously, like they would be checking up with them every 6 months. And so this really depended on the client load and on how many HIV care navigators the state was able to support. Here, so the re-engagement methods utilized by HIV care navigators. So when someone is lost to care, defined as lost to care, how do we get them re-engaged and back into the system? So the most common methods used were phone calls, field and home visits, letters. We also had a couple of states report that they were using newer technology to try to re-engage people in care. So this included emails, text messages, and social media, which we thought was really interesting. And another thing to point out is that while field and home visits were reported as being really effective as getting people back into care, they were also reported as being very expensive and time-consuming. And there are a lot of budget cuts. So a lot of states were having to report that they wanted to do more field visits than they were able to do, or they were just having to cut out field visits altogether. We also asked the states about reported barriers to providing HIV care navigation services to clients. Transportation, by and far, was the largest. This is especially important because the South, the epidemic is more rural, and so there were a lot of people having trouble just getting to their appointments. And states reported more than one barrier, and so that's why those numbers are as high as they are. Stigma and fear of disclosure, client transients, clients moving back and forth was a big issue, and so that led to not having updated contact information, and also client perception of good health. So clients were like, I feel really good, I don't need to go to the doctor, and so they would kind of drop off out of their medical care, and then they would have to go and look for them and get them reengaged. HIV surveillance data is something that HRSA is really pushing right now to monitor care engagement. Half the states were already utilizing surveillance data, and some were planning on rolling it out. And they were all using different types, so whether it's CareWare or EHARS or ADAP, and they were all using different measures as well. So some were using CD4 counts, some were using viral loads, some were using whether or not they'd just gone to the doctor, whether or not they'd filled their prescriptions, and so that varied as well. Unfortunately, a lot of these programs are very new. Only two of the programs are more than 5 years old, and most of the programs were only a couple of years old. So unfortunately, at the time of the interviews, they didn't really have they didn't have any evaluation data to give us to see how effective these care navigation programs were going. So a couple of study strengths and limitations. So definitely strengths is that we got 88% of the Southern Region State Health Departments to participate, and this was really just a great opportunity to be able to get an initial assessment of the content of what Southern states are actually doing for HIV care navigation programs, because we weren't really able to find anything, any previous literature on this. And so the data that we collected can really start to be able to create opportunities to share best practices between states. Of course, though, there is limitations. One of the biggest ones is that there's a wide range of HIV/AIDS disease burden among participating states. So, for example, West Virginia and Oklahoma have much lower prevalence of HIV than, say, for example, Florida and Louisiana. And so this is obviously going to change the way that states are able to engage with the HIV/AIDS populations in their states and the extent to which they're going to be able to, the effort that they're going to be able to give to bringing them back into care. Also, we also only used a single or sometimes two people as representatives of all the state activities, and so we tried to find someone who would know as much as possible, but obviously they're only one person, so they might have not be aware of everything that was going on within the state. And also the data collection occurred at a single time point, and these programs, they were constantly evolving, they were constantly talking about new initiatives that they were rolling out very soon, and so it might not be completely representative of the actual, actually what's happening at this very moment in time. So just briefly, conclusions. Obviously, retention and consistent HIV care is important, and we really wanted to be able to look at the variety of strategies that are used to link and retain and re-engage persons living with HIV, AIDS, and care. And variations exist in the structure of these programs depending on the states, and it would be we're really trying to identify similarities in order to be able to share best practices among the states, and also to just identify common measures that can be used. So for example, just having a common measure of when a person is lost to care, because that was something that varied even between the different programs within the states. Thank you for HRSA for funding this research, and also for all the study participants for volunteering for their time and insight. Any questions? Yeah, okay, great. Yeah. For evaluation, I will have to talk to my PI about that and what her plans are. I think we're definitely going to try to do some publications on this, so in the process of that publication, we might be able to go back and follow up with some of the states and see if they have any evaluation data, but I'm really not sure of that at this time. Yeah.
I have a question. Which two states actually were not included?
Well, as long as they're not here, I don't want to insult anyone's feelings. It was Kentucky, and I'm trying to remember the other state. I think it was Delaware that didn't respond. Yeah, I looked at that right before I came, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but if you follow up with me after the session, I have it, and I can let you know. Thank you.